Welcome back to the program. Certainly, we still focus a lot of our political attention on the subject of health care, particularly what's going on in Washington with respect to this subject. But in fact, in the real world, there's a revolution going on that is transforming the costs of health care. In many cases, it's taking place in companies and among consumers throughout the country. We're going to talk about this today with my guest, John Torinas. He's worked as a journalist, an entrepreneur, and a business manager since leaving the U.S. Marine Corps. He served for 20 years as the CEO of Seriagraph, a graphic and parts manufacturer with plants in the U.S., Mexico, China, and India. He's authored a new book entitled The Company That Solved Healthcare, How Seriagraph Dramatically Reduced Skyrocketing Costs While Providing Better Care, and How Every Company Can Do the Same. John Torinas, thanks so much for joining us.
Morning, Jeff.
It's good to have you here. You had an epiphany at some point, really, that the amount of money that you were spending as a company on healthcare just couldn't be sustained given the increases, that you, in order to keep your company alive, you had to do something differently.
Yeah, all during the 1990s, Jeff, we were doing sort of the HMO model, trying to get better discounts from our healthcare providers, and we'd win a few points every year, and then it finally dawned on me that the what I call hyperinflation in health costs was just blowing away any meager discounts that I was getting. And so we just decided we had to do something completely different. We had to come up with a new business model for the delivery of healthcare for our company. And basically in 2003, we got serious about it because we were paying about $5.5 million a year for healthcare. We had about 800 employees at the time. And it was going up like 15%. And so we were looking at like an $800,000 increase in 2004, and we just couldn't stand it. So we got serious about it.
And in fact, the amount that it was costing you was simply, as you talked about at the time, unsustainable for your company. Those costs couldn't increase, and you have a profitable company.
Yeah, you know, we live in a world, actually manufacturing in the United States, if you think about it, is a world of deflation. You know, our prices go down every year because we sell to General Motors and Ford and Roche and Nokia, and they will do a contract for 3 or 4 years for making graphic parts for their phones or their cars, and they want price decreases in the out years of the contract. And so you can't have deflation in your prices that you're selling at the same time absorbing, you know, huge cost increases in your, on your cost basis. So it just was an unsustainable model. I think at that time, healthcare was our third biggest spend in the company. Wages was first, plastic substrates was second, and healthcare was a big number three.
How did you begin to get a grip when you realized you had to do something about this? How did you begin the process?
Well, you know, I was, as you said, I was a journalist. I just went out and started talking like a journalist does to smart people, seeing, you know, what they were doing. And one of the smart guys I was talking to was running Humana in Milwaukee. That's the big health insurance company. And, of course, they have their own employees. And they, in 2003, right after the new Medicare law passed and HSAs, health savings accounts, were authorized, they jumped into it. So they had 17,000 employees in this insurance company, so they tested out the concept on their own employees, made them the guinea pigs, and darned if it didn't work. They held their costs the first year to 4.5%. The second year they were running less than 5%, and I was running double digit. I said, man, we're going to try this. So we, on January 1st, 2004, we jumped into what's called consumer-driven healthcare. And essentially what I say to my employees is, so today if you're a family member and you work at Seriagraph, we say, hey, we're going to lower your premiums $2,000, and we're going to give you a $3,000 account. Here's $5,000. It's your money. But you have to take on a $1,500 deductible per person and a 30% coinsurance. And so all of a sudden, it's the employee's money, not the employer's money. They've got their skin in the game. If they don't spend it, they keep it. And quickly their head gets in the game, and they become a really effective consumer of healthcare, just like they, you know, they're an effective adult consumer of everything else in their lives, from education to mortgages to cars. So they get their head in the game and everything changes.
To the extent that they suddenly are empowered, talk about whether this was initially perceived as a positive or a negative for them, because like everything else, it's something else the consumer has to do and something else that's pretty complicated.
Yeah, well, you know, any change is tough, Jeff, and this was a big change in the way we were going to buy healthcare. And I basically said to my employees, look, we're in this together. Because most companies in the United States, the average is about 75% employer pay and 25% for the employees. And that's exactly where Serigraph was. So I said, look, we're in this together. You got to help me manage this thing. And so we made it voluntary. They could stay on the old plan if they wanted to, the old $300 deductible, 20% copay. But we made the incentive so strong that most of them gave it a fling, and we got about two-thirds of our people to go in the first year. And immediately, once they did that, utilization dropped 17%. We did a snapshot about 6 months in, 17% down on utilization. So I would argue that that was the overutilization in the system. Subsequently, now that was that law passed in 2003, so there's 7 years' experience. Cigna, the big insurance company, just did a study on it, and that's about what they're finding. They're finding about roughly a 15% drop in cost the first year. By about year four, it accumulates to about 26%. So, if we could take a quarter out of the U.S. healthcare bill, what is it, $2.4 trillion now?
Right.
We're talking major money here.
And was there any downside from that underutilization? Were people, because of economic concerns, putting off things they should do?
Well, that's the charge that's made by the people who are in favor of top-down plans, of government plans. They say, well, people are going to underutilize, and then they're going to, bring on health issues that wouldn't have happened otherwise. I don't think that happens. I don't think people cut short on their health. If they got a problem, they're going to go in and take care of it. Now, we have other parts of our plan that help that. All the prevention and wellness is free. We now provide primary care free, a doctor, a nurse practitioner on site, dietitian, chiropractor. All of that's free. All our prevention and wellness is free. We make doctor visits cheap. They're $20. We want people to go in early and often, take care of their health problems. If you think about it, Jeff, you can't manage health costs if you don't manage health. They go together. So if you're in a company and you're trying to get this under control, you've got to get people to think about their health in a serious and responsible way, and then you got to get them to think about as a consumer in a serious, responsible way. The two go hand in hand.
Was there a way that you tracked, or has there been any tracking in this, where the underutilization was, in what areas specifically?
Well, yeah, I wouldn't even use the word underutilization. I would argue that the plans that are free lunch plans, where you have very low incentives and disincentives, that you get people just buying health care willy-nilly, and so you get what's called overutilization. So you put a plan like this in that incentivizes people to behave in a responsible manner, and what you get is appropriate utilization, not underutilization. I always like to tell a story. When I was in the Marine Corps, on Friday nights at the officers' club, they had 10-cent martinis. And occasionally I was overserved.
Once you did this, and once there was more power in the hands of the employees and the consumers, talk about the ways in which they were concerned about the costs of the services that they were using and how they dealt with that.
Well, the first thing that happened, we said, you can't ask a person to be a good consumer just by giving them the incentives, by giving them the $5,000. You also got to give them the tools. You got to give them the information about what's this costing. So what we did, that medical pricing is in a fog. You cannot find out going in. It's almost impossible to find out what something is going to cost. At least it was back then. It's getting a little better. So we decided to punch through that fog and make our prices transparent. So we just started assembling data points. How much does a hip replacement cost? And we're paying the bills, so we know. And, the insurance companies didn't want to give us the information, and the health providers didn't want to give us the information. We said, hey, look, it's our information, too. We're writing the checks. So we just started accumulating those data points, and finally Blue Cross saw that we were going to do it anyway, and they started helping us. So we now have something like Travelocity. So if you need a hip replacement, you go into our intranet site, called Serenet, and you punch up hip replacements, and it lists all 15 hospitals in the Milwaukee area that do hip replacements. It lists the ranges on prices. It lists their quality ratings. And then further, in our case, we say, okay, and further, this one is such a center of value that we'll give you a check, cold hard cash, for $2,000 if you'll go there.
Mm-hmm. And how did this play out?
It plays out great. The employees, actually, you know, we did an employee survey about 2 years ago, and the employees, surprisingly to me, picked out our health plan as the number one thing they liked about the company. And I was a little counterintuitive because I thought, gee, we got high deductibles and high coinsurance, offset, of course, by the health account. But I thought maybe that's going to be a negative. It was just the opposite. It was a huge positive, and I started scratching my head and saying, and deducing what happened, and I think I figured it out. There's some psychological studies that show that people will pay a little more if they're in control of the decision and have the power to make a choice. So our system puts the control back in the hands of the employee, the consumer. So they like that. The second thing they like is they perceive the company is investing in their health. We have free primary care, free prevention. And so it's like tuition reimbursement. When you invest in a company's, an employee's education, it's a positive morale factor. The same thing when they perceive you're investing in their health. So it's been a huge morale plus. We use it in recruiting. It's a big tool in retention of employees. They love our plan.
One of the things that you discovered in all of this is the huge disparity in the cost for individual procedures. I mean, there's one thing you talk about that was like almost $9,000 or $500.
It's incredible, Jeff. It's just cattywampus. It makes absolutely no rational sense. The lead article in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel this morning was a study, a big study, national study, and showed that, you know, the variation is from in the seven markets they picked, Milwaukee being the second highest, was from 200% of Medicare charges up to 450%. So, you know, like a 2.5 times variation on a procedure. So what that comes down to on, I say, a hip in Milwaukee is you can pay $18,000 for a hip or you can pay $39,000. So my question is, why would any employer, why would any employee pay $39,000 for a hip when they can buy, you know, a high-quality hip for $18,000? I just don't know. Why would you pay more?
Of course, part of the problem, as you alluded to before, is that there has been so little transparency in the system, and the system was set up in ways that were unlike anything else that we do as consumers. It would be like buying a car, and you have to buy the steering wheel at one place, and you got to go buy the tires somewhere else and the seats somewhere else.
It's even worse. There's somebody in the middle that they call the third-party payer, an insurance company, and you know, you just lob something into a pool at the beginning of the year, and then they buy the car for you, and you don't even know what it costs, you know? So, you got to get the consumer back in touch with the costs of health care. And my employees at Serigraph now are really into this, so they're avid consumers. They're checking everything before they get a procedure. They're reading their bills when they get them back. And by the way, there's always mistakes in the bills, usually overcharging, obviously, not undercharging. So, and once the employees get their heads in the game, they become great advocates for reform and for the company.
Was there any ongoing, once the plan settled in, was there any ongoing pushback that you had to deal with among the employees?
We had a little bit of pushback in the beginning, but not a lot. One of the things we do is require a health risk assessment every year. It's like a mini physical. I got a little bit of pushback on that, but I said, look, you know, we're spending $7,000 an employee on health care. By the way, the national average is up around 11 or 12. And some of our public systems in Wisconsin are paying as high as $25,000 for health care. And we're at 7. But I say, we're paying 7. The least you can do is take a physical every year and take care of yourself. You got to be, you know, you got some responsibility for this, for your health and for our health costs. So the good thing about that is every year we catch some people that are, you know, heading for some serious trouble, and we immediately, our health team, on-site health team, with the doctor and the nurse, get on it and help these guys get back to wellness. So there hasn't, Jeff, been a lot of pushback. In fact, just the opposite. These people are really helping me manage the system now. And if enough companies do that, you know, pretty soon this whole thing is going to rationalize itself. You won't have a variation on price of 2.5-3 times because the guys at the high end, they're going to be out of business.
Is this something that in order to work effectively has to be within the confines of a large company such as yours? Can this work on a smaller scale?
We'd be classified as a medium-sized company, right, Jeff, and we're self-insured, so we're a little more nimble, and it's a little more of a direct benefit when we produce some savings. But if you're in a small company with, say, 30 employees and you're in an insurance pool, you could still put these kind of principles in. You can buy a consumer-driven health plan. You can, I would suggest that even small companies avail themselves of these community clinics and offer the primary care free. And I'm talking office visits and annual physicals. Because if you keep the people healthy, your experience is going to be a lot better. You're going to keep, at the end of the day, what you want to do is keep people out of a hospital. They're expensive places, $5,000 a night, and they're dangerous places, lots of infections. So you want to keep people out of the hospital. So I would offer free primary care, even if I had 30 employees. Mm-hmm. And then I'd have a high deductible plan.
Other companies that have looked at what you've done, talk about their reaction to it.
Well, this stuff is starting to really catch hold. On the health savings accounts, I think about 50% of the large employers in the country now have high deductible plans offset by a health savings plan. So there's about 20 million of those HSAs in the country. There's another 20 million HRAs called health reimbursement arrangement. So you got 40 million new consumers out there coming at the providers and saying, hey, I want quality, I want service, and I want price. So that's a sort of a unseen reform that's just, you know, gathering huge momentum. I would argue that the change in healthcare is going to come from the grassroots, not from Washington, D.C. The second part is, we have an on-site clinic. The New York Times reported 2 weeks ago that 100 of the largest employers now have on-site clinics, and it's going to be 250 by the end of the year. Incidentally, the experience, if you've got on-site primary care, the experience of the company that led the charge in Wisconsin, a company called Quad Graphics, is that they're 33% under the national average for costs. Just by a big emphasis on primary care, you take care of people. You keep them out of the hospital.
Talk a little bit about how you've had to become so versed in this and essentially become an expert in it in order to deal with your own company.
Well, that's a good question. You know, typically the health benefits in a company are managed in the HR department and the human resources department. And those people are, you know, they go into those jobs because they're caregivers and they like to give service, and they just get totally consumed with the complexity of the system, the insurance system that we have in this country today. So they're not typically change agents. So in my experience, what has to happen is somebody at the C level of a company, the chief executive or the chief financial officer, or the chief operating officer, has to get involved and say, hey, look, we're not going to do this the way we've been doing this for the last 20, 30 years. It isn't working on the economic side. It might be working well on the medical side, but the economic side is busted. And so if a C-level guy like me has to get involved and say, okay, we're going to do this different. We're going to use innovations. We're going to reform this system. And then the HR people get the message, and they jump in and start helping making the change. Change is difficult, Jeff.
Is anything that's going on in Washington now with respect to health care working in ways that are counter to what you're doing and to what you're seeing happen on the grassroots level?
Well, as you know, and I'm sure your listeners know, Jeff, what happened in Washington earlier this year under what's called Obamacare is reform of the health insurance industry. It had very little to do with delivery of health. It had to do with who's got access, who's paying for it, what taxes are we raising to pay for it, and that was the great debate. Actually, in a way, it was a monumental distraction from real reform. So I would argue that top-down reform from Washington, D.C., which is largely a collection of mandates, is probably, I don't know what's going to happen to it. With a Republican House, they're going to slow it down. A lot of the Republicans took over the legislatures in their states. They're going to slow it down. So it's going to hinge a little bit on what happens in the 2012 elections. And to be honest, it didn't really change much of what we're doing here at Serigraf. They didn't get after the costs. They didn't address health care quality. They talked about access, and they talked about who's going to pay for it. So I think these reforms at the grassroots level, which are gaining tremendous momentum, they didn't have a lot of momentum back in 2003. But in 2010, they've got a full head of steam. I think they're going to carry the day much more than what happened under Obamacare.
And what are the biggest challenges you face now, given the system that you have?
Well, the inflation rate, the endemic inflation rate, is still there, running at 6-7% a year. That's about what the premiums are going up. So I have to come up with innovations every year to offset that that endemic inflation. So I'm out there continually looking for new innovations and new ways to deliver healthcare that are, number one, high quality, good service, and cost effective. So, for as an example, I couldn't figure out how to get a doctor into my medium-sized company, an on-site doctor, because we're not big enough to fund our own doctor. So there was this new model sweeping the country called concierge medicine. It was for fat cats, for executives. Mm-hmm. And so Mr. Executive would say, well, I'm not satisfied with the impersonal care I'm getting at my local healthcare system, so I'm going to hire a doctor for $1,500 a year to do my primary care, to be my healthcare quarterback. So I looked at that and I said, well, gee, I wonder if they do it for my plant, my factory workers. So I approached one of these guys and said, would you cut us a deal and take care of all our employees? So we rolled that out on January 1st of 2009, and about 20% of our employees now have their own concierge doctor or retainer doctor. There's different terms for it, and they're getting free primary care.
To what extent does this distract you or take time from things you have to do to run your core business?
Well, I'm sort of lucky. I'm now chairman of the company, Jeff. My son is running the company, so I've got the time to put into this. But, you know, we're sort of breaking the ice here, Jeff. So I think a lot of the things that have been, you know, what I did was find innovations, bring them back to Serigraph, use Serigraph as the incubator, the hothouse for these ideas, test them out, see if they work. And then if they work, keep them. If they didn't, get rid of them. It was pragmatic. So other companies now can just sort of follow along what we've done because we've sort of, carved the path, if you will.
John Torinas, the book is The Company That Solved Healthcare. John, I thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Jeff, thanks for indulging my obsession.
Well, I appreciate it.